On Thursday, the European Commission announced that more than 3 million more refugees and migrants are expected to arrive in Europe by the end of 2016. There's no expectation that that tide of migrants is going to slow down, even as colder temperatures in the winter set in. Manveen Rana is a senior broadcast journalist at BBC Radio 4, and she spent the last 4 months following the Denis family. They're a Syrian family of five attempting to reach Europe, and she's been broadcasting their journey on the BBC program The World at One. Now, Manveen first connected with the Denis in August. After fleeing the Syrian city of Dara, they spent 2 years living in Jordan as refugees. They then set their sights on the Netherlands as a place to start a new life. But even then, the timing of their journey was crucial. Listen to 16-year-old Abian speaking to Manveen just a few weeks ago.
At the end, they will stop accepting more refugees. So that's why we had to go fast and quickly, not waste any time. Because if we waste time and they close the borders, we will have no other chance.
It's a story, a real-life story, where time is precious and the perils are many. Manveen Rana joins me now from London. Manveen, welcome.
Hi.
So tell us about the Denis family. Your spokesman there is a 16-year-old. What about the rest of them?
Yes, the 16-year-old, I think, has grown up very fast. There's a mother and father, Abdurrauf and Majd. They're a fairly middle-class background in Syria, but their life ever since the war broke out has more or less been on hold. Majd has two brothers who protested against the Assad regime. They were arrested about two years ago, and they haven't been seen since. The family more or less assume that they've probably been killed. That's partly why the family felt they had to flee Dara in the first place. They've got three sons. One of them is still in Jordan, but Abian and Yaman, who are the youngest, are travelling with them across Europe. So Abian is a 16-year-old. As you heard, he's a very bright young boy. He desperately wants to get to Europe, and the prime reason for the family really getting to Europe seems to be their desire for the children to have a better education. They're not getting a very good one in Jordan at the moment. They're living hand to mouth, really. It's very hard for Syrians to be able to get jobs out there. You have to register, and in order to register, you need money. So it's a vicious cycle. The eldest daughter, Alma, who's also travelling, is 22. She'd almost graduated in Syria, so she'd spent 3 years studying at university. And then just as she should have been reaching the end of her education, in the moment when she could go out in the world, the war happened. And she went to Jordan, where she wasn't allowed to go to university without paying much more money than they could afford. And she's basically sat at home for two years. And that's why she kept sort of saying the risks, even though they know they're risking their life making this journey, are worth it, because they can't really envisage having much of a life if they don't.
And Abian and the rest of the family are acutely aware of the fact that many Europeans don't want them, will try to turn them away. But they really sort of make a case to you that it's not charity. They're not asking for a handout.
Let them think about as a donation to help us to find a better life. And by that, we can help them to grow their country and make it better. I think they will see it like they are helping us.
And do you think you deserve it?
Everyone deserves a better life.
It was a striking part of your story, their story, Manveen, because you have a family here who was probably in many ways well on their way to success in Syria before it was all taken away, and they just want to continue that.
Absolutely. That's actually something they say very often. They just feel like they want to get their life back. And they genuinely believe, as you heard from Abian there, that they would be bringing something to Europe. You know, they don't want charity. They know they're going to need help when they first arrive, but they're absolutely certain. They reiterated this constantly, that they believe they'd actually be bringing skills. They'd be bringing, that they're desperate to get educated and to be able to contribute to society, and they'd be adding to the economy.
So physical dangers, obviously many. We've seen the images, we've heard some of the reporting, but there's a remarkable scene in your story here where the family is, I think, in Turkey. They're told they're going to take a boat out to sea and that the boat is going to be intentionally scuttled so that the Coast Guard will come and rescue them. They'll have no choice. If the boat is healthy, they just turn them around. Does this horribly, terrifyingly daring strategy, does it work?
It sounds like madness, doesn't it? The bizarre thing is, the smugglers tell them so little about the journey they'll be making before they go. And so a lot of this is sort of based on the rumours or the things that they've heard from low-down smugglers who often don't know themselves. But this is something that most of the Syrians I was talking to were going into, you know, completely aware of the dangers, completely aware that at some point they'd have a knife or something, they would have to burst the boat they were on, knowing they'd end up in the sea. And it's particularly terrifying because most of the Syrians I met, including the family, apart from the father, can't swim.
Well, let's not give away the ending of the story. It is the story of a journey, but I think we can say that it has a relatively happy ending. Here's the family arriving in Greece.
What are you? Thanks, God.
Yes.
Finally.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you?
How are you guys?
We are happy.
We are very happy.
My mom was desperate for one day from the journey, and she said I would die if I go back to Izmir.
Really?
Yeah. And I started to cry with her.
Did it feel like you were never going to get here?
A little bit.
So that's where they'd managed to get to, a Greek island. And for them, psychologically, I think, that had been the hardest part. They'd been in Turkey for a month at that stage, and they'd tried again and again. Just getting the right smuggler, getting a plan that works, had sort of seemed impossible. They were trying almost every night at one stage, and nothing was happening. And it was also the bit of the journey that they were most afraid of, given they don't swim and given that they'd heard about all the risks. And they sort of assumed that the moment they got to Europe, everything would be okay. Obviously, it's not as simple as that. It's a huge journey. I mean, getting to a Greek island is a hell of a long way from the Netherlands, and there's not very much along the way which makes it any easier for a refugee at the moment. So it's not an easy journey.
The overwhelming numbers of refugees are undeniable. We said 3 million more are expected. The EU knows this. But what needs to happen, based on what you've seen, to stop people having to get on rickety boats, intentionally scuttled, risking drowning, in many cases drowning indeed, so that they can escape this war? What needs to happen on a policy level in Europe to at least make this a bit safer?
It's not for me to say whether these people should be coming here or not. That's not something we would judge. But there are so many things along the way where you think actually the process is so flawed. For example, a lot of the people who are coming, the main driving force seems to be education and the fact that they can't get it in the countries that they're in. So even people who have managed to escape Syria, if they're in places like Turkey or Lebanon or Jordan, they're really struggling.
The real-life journey of the Denis family from war-torn Syria into Europe is told by Manveen Rana on BBC Radio 4. Manveen Rana, thank you so much.
Thank you.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.